This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Yes, yes, yes. Episode 100, people, 100! If that music hasn't got you pumped and dancing around the kitchen, or the office, or hurling down the wrong side of the motorway in your car, or wherever you listen to this podcast, I don't know what will. We have a lot of celebrating still to come in this, I can't believe it's not a real pod, that has somehow made it to the century mark. Indeed. Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast still looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas, with a bit of music and pop culture bits thrown in too. We did it, folks. It's a very proud pod day today. Who says you can't keep talking shite and not fall in love with it? I'm buzzing, but don't worry. I haven't forgot what you came here for. There are plenty of things to watch and see and to listen to this week in this bumper episode, and I'm also thrilled that I'll be joined later on by the wonderful Justin Somper, all the way from Perth, Australia, no expense spared, to talk about his new book, Pirate Academy, and some of the pop culture vibes he's feeling right now. But that's for later. For now, with the quietest drum roll ever. Is that even the drum roll? I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Shall we begin?
I got a story to tell.
I'm excited. Are we telling the truth or are we gonna lie? What are we gonna do?
There was no plan B in my life, ever. Bon Jovi was all or nothing.
Five guys from nowhere. And if you work hard enough and you dream big enough, you can make it.
There's some young kid around here from New Jersey who's making some noise.
They gave me the opportunity to record on weekends and nights.
We would go in at like 4 a.m. and start doing original songs.
Yeah! Oh, whoa, whoa. Oh, yes. Hold on. I would just like to point out, as if this being the week of episode 100 isn't glorious enough, it's also my birthday weekend. And what do Disney Plus go and do? Release a new docuseries about Bon Jovi. Are you kidding me? Get the Hampton water, pour it in a large vat or bucket, because we're going to lay you down on a bed of rosé, not in a creepy way at all, because yes, Hampton water is John Bon Jovi's quite luscious and wonderful French rosé, which I'd highly recommend. And then I'm going to sit back, put my feet up, wear my rippedest jeans, because as I said, thank you, good night, the Bon Jovi story is now on Disney Plus, and I'm overwhelmed. This series, over 4 episodes, looks back over the 40-year career of the band, jumping between their current world tour and the issues they were having, and goes all the way back to when they were wee poodle-haired nippers playing dive bars all over the Jersey Shore. My confession to you is, and the reason I'm probably overexcited, is because I've seen Bon Jovi over 20 times. Yes, it's confession time, both here in Ireland, Milton Keynes twice, believe it or not, New York City, Donington, Philadelphia. Yes, so I will approach this documentary with all the bias that you would expect and can tell you I adored it. While it will never include all the rock and roll warts of their story, they do kind of hint at some troublesome times in their past. And this definitely comes to the fore when Richie Sambora, who was with the band for 3 decades, but then abruptly left due to substance abuse, shall we say, turns up on screen to tell his part of the storyline. When he says those lines, are we telling the truth or are we going to lie? What are we going to do? It sent chills down this little rock nerd's spine. This one is for the fans. Casual observers may be intrigued, but ultimately, haters are going to hate. So if you have even a passing interest into how Bon Jovi went from New Jersey nobodies to arena-filling hair metalers, then raise your hands, binge this cracker, and have a nice day. That is Thank You, Good Night, the Bon Jovi story, which is now streaming on Disney+. I want to lay you down on a bedroom. Ah, yes, good times, good times.
Allow me to welcome you to the Dead Boy Detective Agency. We help ghosts resolve their mysteries. Ghosts who cannot let go.
Dead Boy Detectives?
It's Aces, right?
It's just a stupid name.
Dead Boy Detectives on Netflix is a new series that follows Charles Rowland and Edwin Payne, who decided not to enter the afterlife and stay on Earth and investigate crimes that involve the supernatural. Based on characters created by Neil Gaiman and Matt Wagner, this is technically an extension of the Sandman universe that Netflix already have as a series and are filming season 2. Adapted by Steve Yockey, who has good pedigree with shows like The Flight Attendant and Supernatural, alongside Sweet Tooth's Beth Schwartz. This series also has a Doom Patrol link, as some characters from there also appear due to the fact that this originally was going to be a HBO show before they dumped it and Netflix stepped in. Arriving with a lot of buzz and a lot of emo hype, what's not to love? So all 8 episodes of Dead Boy Detectives are now streaming on Netflix.
You're an alien. You're super powerful. Recently saved the world with your friends. What do you like to do for fun?
Vengeance.
I was thinking more like reading or yoga.
No, if you won't.
Hey, buddy.
Isn't it great to finally relax?
I am an echidna warrior.
One for the smallies out there, Knuckles on Paramount Plus is a mini-series spin-off from Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which is set between the events of that film and its upcoming sequel, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, and finds Idris Elba returning as the voice of Knuckles. This one can be seen as, I suppose, Knuckles' personal journey of self-discovery while causing complete carnage wherever he goes. Ben Schwartz will also reprise his role as Sonic the Hedgehog as a guest star. All 6 episodes of Knuckles stream from today on Paramount Plus, and yeah, I'm fairly confident it'll be a pretty big smash hit for them. And while we're on the subject of smallies, it's been barely a week since Bluey dropped. That emotional, oh, the roller coaster that was the 28-minute special last week. Parents were blubbing all over the gaff. People were losing their minds. Well, they keep the surprises coming, as Disney Plus just dropped another surprise episode this week, a 7-minute little beauty called, yes, Surprise. I adored it. Yes, like all Bluey episodes. It was genuinely gorgeous. Just simple. Simple as is. And had some really interesting developments. Oh, I'm saying nothing. Anyways, that's Bluey, the surprise episode, which is now on Disney+.
Detective, you're going to want to see this.
"25 fractures in all. Only bodies I've ever seen this broken were run over by trains.
He's killed before. You don't start out this proficient at it.
I think he knew his victims. Feels personal.
This guy's left no eyewitnesses. Who could not be noticed?
The last thing we need right now is a serial killer.
Well, that's what we got, sir.
Definitely one not for the smallies, and maybe not even for the biggies. This Dem the Scare is the second season of Prime Video's horror anthology, Dem. And this time, as I said, it's called The Scare and is set in Los Angeles in 1991. It centres on LAPD detective Dawn Reeve, who is assigned to a new case, a gruesome murder that has left the most hardened detectives shaken. As Dawn draws closer to the truth, yes, as you expected, something malevolent grips her and her family. Directed and created by Little Marvin, if you remember season 1, Dem Covenant, which was set in 1953, oh, that was a weird, wonderful, creepy and, some would say, quite intense affair. And that looks like exactly what we're getting here. Part 7, part Candyman, 1000% freaky. This is one for horror fans everywhere and Jordan Peele heads. That's Dem, The Scare, which is now on Prime Video.
This machine is reminding people our lives have more than one possible path.
This machine is validating.
Mysterious.
Magic.
Destiny.
Your future.
I have so many questions.
Same.
The people in this town completely upended their lives because of a card they got from a machine.
That thing will tell you your life's potential.
The Morphos made everybody think about their dreams. And now it's saying,
are you ready for the next stage?
The Big Door Prize Season 2 on Apple TV Plus continues to follow the inhabitants of a sleepy town whose lives were changed forever following the arrival of a mysterious machine that basically gives them life choice advice. Whether that's for work or relationships, it's just all a bit weird. It's all a bit weird. Season 2 sees Chris O'Dowd, Gabrielle Dennis, Mary Holland and Josh Segarra reprise their roles, as this season we hopefully get to understand what the hell is going on and who is behind this mystery machine. I quite enjoyed Season 1. While not groundbreaking or gripping, yeah, had a bit of fun, an intriguing concept, and I kept watching to see how it all plays out, so I will be doing so for this one. So that is The Big Door Prize Season 2, which is now on Apple TV Plus.
We're going after a CIA asset that's been captured.
Is this your first mission in theater, JTAC?
Second.
Do me a favor, keep up. The last thing we need in this op is have to save your ass.
The hell are these guys?
Local militia.
Yo, hand over in 5.
I'm ready.
I am your eyes in the sky and the bringer of doom.
Subtle. I got movement.
We got a situation.
Two movies that can be, let's say, best described as straight-to-video crackers. That will surely pass a few hours of your weekend. Land of the Bad on Prime Video sees Liam Hemsworth and his brother Luke team up in an action thriller which also stars Russell Crowe. Yeah, that's not a bad lineup. This film follows a US Army Special Forces unit who are ambushed during a mission and whose only hope is a remote Air Force drone operator who is on hand to assist them during a 48-hour battle. Did you say ambushed military operations, drones, and a race against the clock? Hoorah! Sign me the hell up. We all need some action-packed nonsense in our lives. So that is Land of the Bad on Prime Video. And speaking of nonsense, The Retirement Plan on Paramount Plus sees Nicolas Cage star in an action thriller about a retired hitman who was called upon by his daughter in order to help her and her own daughter when she crosses the wrong people. Cage has been living life as a beach bum in the Cayman Islands and he must dust off his skills to bring these people to heel. Movie wise, will this be good, Nick? Or bad Nick? Or maybe who cares, Nick? Because it's Nick Cage. That's all that matters. So that's The Retirement Plan, which is now on Paramount Plus. And coming from Korea, absolutely batshit concepts, landing on Netflix. The irony being that they're celebrating Earth Day this week. An asteroid is on course to crash into Earth in 200 days. And yes, it destroyed a planet. The world soon learns of the news and falls into mass confusion and panic, and what happens from there on is an examination of the despair and hope in individuals aware of the forthcoming end of days event. As I said, it's coming from Korea, so you can expect it to be quite mad. Hellbound's charismatic star Yoo Ah-in was due to be the lead in this one, but let's just say allegations of illegal drug use dragged his rise to stardom earthwards with a bang, and the show was delayed, re-edited, and I'm fairly certain we're going to see a lot less of him when this one finally hits us. But ultimately, Korea know dystopia well, and I've got a good feeling it feels a bit deep impacty, which is means I'm definitely all in, because who doesn't love an end of the world chuckle fest? So that's Goodbye Earth, which is now on Netflix.
What is health?
Why is eating painful?
What changes do I need to do to get healthier?
Why is it so hard for me to lose weight?
How do I still not know what's right for my body?
Our gut affects our whole body.
It influences so much about our health.
All of it is cool.
Gut science has been the hottest area for the last decade or more.
Wow.
Diseases like anxiety and depression, cancer, autism, Parkinson's are all related to the gut.
In Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut on Netflix, this lighthearted and informative documentary delves into the digestive system as it demystifies the role gut health plays in our overall well-being. Of special interest to us here in Ireland is that it features UCC scientist Professor John Cryan, who is a global expert on gut health. So, you know what? When you're watching your YouTube clips and anything to do with Arsenal, it's all I get is ads about your gut. Your gut and your greens and your drinks. And yeah, so it's a thing, people. It's a thing. Anyway, that's Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut, which is now on Netflix. For decades, Dan Rather delivered the news with authenticity, integrity and courage. So in Rather on Netflix, a new documentary made by Frank Marshall, this one chronicles his rise to prominence, his sudden and dramatic public downfall, and then his redemption and re-emergence as a voice of reason to a new generation. Looks like a pretty decent doc with some, yeah, pretty decent caliber in front of and behind the camera. And it arrives with some early buzz from the various film festivals where it has ran. So that's Rather, which is now on Netflix. Heading into the final straight, we have, what would a week be without some nonsense? Some glorious reality TV nonsense. And yes, it's another high-end real estate docuseries. This time in the form of Lux Listings Toronto on Prime Video. In Toronto's hyper-competitive multi-million dollar real estate industry, three agents, power couple Peter and Paige Turkin, and rising star Brett Stark provide a revealing glimpse into their careers and personal lives. Yeah, you either like looking at shiny new houses and ones you'll never be able to afford, or you don't. But if you do, that's Lux Listings Toronto, which is now on Prime Video. And wrapping up streaming this week with three non-English offerings. First up, we have Deliver Me on Netflix, which is a controversial and quite dark new Swedish series. It centres on a boy who lays face down in front of a swing set as his life drains out of the gaping wound in his head. And his best friend, who stands behind him with a warm gun in his trembling hand. Oh, bloody hell. Based on the best-selling novel of the same name, after the 14-year-old commits this horrible crime, the question of who bears responsibility is raised throughout the series. Yes, who doesn't love an absolute chuckle fest from the Swedes? They really know their darkness. This looks quite good and probably a bit stressful. So that's Deliver Me, which is now on Netflix. Even more of a chuckle fest, the Asunta case comes from Spain and is a series inspired by true events. Two parents report that their 12-year-old daughter Asunta is missing. The police investigation soon reveals evidence that points to them both as possible authors of the crime. What can lead two parents to end their daughter's life? What hides beneath that perfect family picture? These are the questions about a crime that shook a nation. Coming from Spain, that's the Asunta case, which is now on Netflix. And finally on streaming this week, City Hunter from Japan is an action thriller which sees an exceptional marksman and hopeless playboy, Private Eye Ryo Saiba, reluctantly form an alliance with his late partner's sister to investigate his death. Based on the best-selling manga, Ryo Saiba is an extremely popular character in Japan and has been adapted for the screen numerous times before. Jackie Chan even played him once. So a lot of folks are quite excited by this. So we'll see what happens. So that's City Hunter, which is now on Netflix. And there you go. That's your streaming for the week. Yeah, not a bad one. You know, some kind of decent, some, yeah. You know, it's the end of the month, folks. Of course, people are going to be just throwing all sorts of things at the wall and see what sticks. Cinema-wise, there is a smorgasbord of offerings. Some good, some bad. But there's offerings.
Tashi Duncan.
She's in another league.
You're incredible today.
Come on!
To have a fashion line, a foundation. She's going to turn a whole family into millionaires.
What are you going to do now?
Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
I want you to be my coach.
I want you to be my coach.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl?
In Challengers, Tashi, played here by Zendaya, plays a former tennis prodigy turned coach who, let's just say, has some friends in the form of two boys called Josh O'Connor and Mike Faist. And that's all I'll say. Oh, I'll also say the word trouble. Expertly directed by Luca Guadagnino, who did Call Me By Your Name. This is an edgy indie movie about tennis and, as I mentioned, troubles. I don't want to give too much away because you're better off, again, like most movies. Just don't look at traitors. They're just evil. The lead three actors are simply superb in this one. All the sexy times causing various steamy windows, accompanied by an absolutely fantastic, ravey soundtrack from Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. The tennis is also wonderfully shot in a very fun, energetic and new way. It's definitely, I haven't seen that before. But again, it is the three leads who make this movie. Zendaya wonderfully controls those around her in whatever way she can, while the two lads have breakout roles which should see them jump to the top of some Hollywood audition wish lists. Coming in at 2 hours and 11 minutes, the time flew by, which is also another indication of a well-made, enjoyable and fun movie. And I'm not even a mad tennis head. If you like sport, if you're intrigued by troubles, and you're in the mood for raving in a field at some point over the weekend, then yes, this one will definitely get you in the mood. That's Challengers, which is now in cinemas. Is it one of the best tennis movies ever made? I think it's got a good shot at being so.
Not my happiest day. But let me take you back to an even worse one. The day the Vanderkoys killed my family and left me deaf and mute. So, I made a three-step plan. Step one, give myself an inner voice. I took the last one I remembered from this video game. Player one wins! Step two, get stronger. A lot stronger. And step three, join a team.
Welcome to the Resistance.
Boy Kills World is an uber-violent dystopian action movie which has a plot which revolves around a campaign of vengeance and murder enacted by a martial arts expert known as Boy and played by Bill Skarsgård. A boy who was rendered deaf-mute by an attack that killed his entire family and whose thoughts are presented as an inner voice derived from a childhood video game. Ahead of his controversial-looking remake of The Crow, still a bit sketchy in that one, he's, shall we say, looking quite fit. to be that fit and probably still hungry right now, all that chicken. He's the new action star. He's unleashing hell upon his enemies. And yes, all those crime lords who indeed murdered his family. Kind of looking like a video game version of Kill Bill. You can expect uber violence, death, banging soundtracks and multiple dead bodies. Feck it, with Monkey Man almost out of the cinemas, someone had to step in and take that vengeful action hero limelight. So that is the pretty crazy looking Boy Kills World, which is now in cinemas. Also out this week, based on a true story, Ordinary Angels centres on Sharon, played here by an Erin Brockovich style scene-chewing Hilary Swank, who is a fierce but struggling alcoholic hairdresser in small town Kentucky, who discovers a renewed sense of purpose when she meets Ed, played by Reacher's Alan Ritson, a widower working hard to make ends meet for his two daughters. With his youngest daughter waiting for a liver transplant, Sharon sets her mind to helping the family with all the financial and medical odds that are stacked against them. Coming from Sony's faith-based studio setup, and well, God is good, and not appearing in this movie, he can be found lurking throughout, shall we say. Don't worry, the religious woo-woo stuff is kept to a minimum. It kind of tries to keep all sides happy, but ultimately ends up as a bit of a TV movie from a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. It's fine. People may have blubbed, but I hear those people would blub at anything. Is it a cinema movie? Probably not. Is it something for streaming when it pops up there? Quite possibly. Sweet and harmless. That's Ordinary Angels, which is now at cinemas. Another one out this week is the American Society of Magical Negroes, where a young man gets recruited into a secret society of magical black people who dedicate their lives to making white people's lives easier. Although initially buzzed with his new powers, he begins to question the value of using supernatural means to do the very thing he's felt obligated to do his whole life. Starring Justice Smith in the lead role, this hot script had been hanging around Hollywood for quite a while and now is finally made into a movie that, unfortunately, does not deliver on its promise. It's all a bit low energy and kind of stands up there beside Fantastic Beasts for the whole meh and ho-hum vibe of it all. Smith just doesn't settle into the role, and while his surrounding cast are decent, it all just feels a bit low-key for such a high-profile movie, which, if it had been made by an indie studio, maybe could have seen it turned into a much more edgy affair. It's all just kind of bland and middle-of-the-road. Anyways, the American Society of Magical Negroes is now in cinemas. Welcome!
Listening to the wind of change. Wow. I mean, I've seen pictures, but this is...
We don't talk politics. Here we are. One.
Hey, guys.
Wait a minute, what the hell is going on down there?
Oh, whoa.
We gotta get out now, guys.
Let's get out.
Oh, my God.
Another low-key release that, again, maybe, let's say, more of a streaming flick than for the big screen is ISS. Set aboard the International Space Station when something, shall we say, not good breaks out on Earth. Soon, the US and Russian astronauts on board each receive orders from the ground. Take control of the station by any means necessary. Directed by Gabriella Coppertweit, who made the excellent documentary Blackfish. This one stars Ariana DeBose, Chris Messina and John Gallagher Jr. It's not bad, the less you know the better, but as I mentioned, it's probably not a cinema trip worth investing in. It's more likely to be much more successful when it lands on streaming at some point. So, decent enough, but no cigar. That's ISS, which is now in cinemas. Listen, if you like low-key indie sci-fi stuff, yeah, maybe you do want to see this. But either way, as I said, it's now in cinemas.
The days were quiet.
They're still here. Never thought they'd last.
Through them ran the sense like an underground river.
And will he never have children?
Maybe there's enough people in the world, Patrick.
That there would come a time when these days would be looked back on as happiness. All that life could give of contentment and peace.
And finally, based on the internationally acclaimed Irish author John McGahern's award-winning novel of the same name, That They May Face the Rising Sun is a vivid evocation of nature, humanity and life itself set in the 1980s rural community in Ireland. Starring Barry Ward and Anna Baderk and directed by Pat Collins, let's say this can be best described as a very calming, chilled, zen movie. Beautifully shot, it gives a true sense of time and place and rural life. It's almost like it's been set up as the anti-Banshees of Inisherin, where that movie was all about its dark comedic elements, playing up its rural characters and life. This one feels almost as if it's a documentary about life in a small, remote town. Literally nothing happens. Like, maybe one or three things, but it's just treading along, moving along, singing a song. The two leads guide us through their lives where local characters pop in for a cup of tea or a sandwich or a whiskey and a chat. Having been blessed to have met the man myself way back in the day, his low-key, intelligent, honest and beautiful writing is all over this script and they use it extremely well. Having just been crowned as the best film winner at last week's IFTAs, which came as a major shock to everyone, this can only mean good things for its box office profile. If you enjoyed On Colleen Kuhn, that's probably the nearest vibe I can think of what's going on here. But I kind of, yeah, I was just like, I felt like I was living in the house with them. Anyway, that's what I thought. So there you go. That They May Face the Rising Sun is now in cinemas. And there is your cinema for the week. A plethora of choices to suit every type of cinema goer. Some more cinematic than others, but ultimately, plenty of choices. Get out, step away from the stress of the football, go see a movie, come back, all will be grand. Next up, let's see what new music is dropping this week.
All in good time, I gave it my best. I was alone till I found myself. Grew up to be a man, more or less. All in good time.
All in good time, I drifted away. I ran my mouth till I had nothing to say. You broke my heart, then I was okay. All in good time.
One for all you chilled folksters out there, and I most definitely include myself in that category. Light Verse is the seventh studio album by singer-songwriter Sam Beam, a.k.a. Iron and Wine. Due to tour Ireland, Europe and the UK this autumn, his Vicar Street gig is actually the night after John Grant in the same venue, so I'm obviously praying for a bit of a crossover on stage there at some point, please God. This is his first new solo album since 2017's Beast Epic, and as you heard there, features Fiona Apple on one of the tracks. Consider me pumped, as well as one can be pumped for a folk album, and I'm ready for this one. Ready? That's Iron and Wine with the new album Light Verse, which is now available to soothe your ears. Now, last week in all the hullabaloo of Taylor Swift's The Tortured Poets Department, I was just so distracted by it that I completely forgot to shout out Pearl Jam's 12th studio album, Dark Matter, which was also released. Having been chatting all week in my Pearl Jammers WhatsApp group and my Hair Metalers Messenger group, yes, these are real places that do exist, it has been decided by the groups that this is in fact their best album in a long time and fits nicely alongside 10 and Versus. So that's Pearl Jam's new album, Dark Matter. And speaking of Tay-Tay, listen, I've had a week to think about it, to cope with the fact that she ended up actually dropping a surprise double album with 31 bleeding songs. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? But now I feel I can do my hot take, or I can briefly speak about it. First of all, Joe escaped the roasting, and it bizarrely ended up being Matt Healy from the 1975, who got all the kicks all over this album. Kim Kardashian also got a bit of kicking, and her own obsessive hardcore fans, Taylor had some strong words for them too. But yeah, that's the way it is. Ultimately, it's a fine album, but this is where it's going to get controversial. I'm going to say this is Taylor's version of Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. What is he talking about? That was a bloated Guns N' Roses double album that should have been one perfect album because they had the 16 or so songs, but instead released all sorts of extras. And I think Taylor may have fallen into the same pattern here of more is better, when in fact, I don't think so. I do have some standout tracks that I particularly like. Who's Afraid of Little Old Me is a pretty quality, angry banger. The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is a brutal but brilliant takedown of Pearl Matty. Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus, it just perked me up. I thought it was very good. And The Black Dog feels like an old school classic introspective Taylor. But I also think on her next one, because obviously Taylor listens to what I say, I think producers Jack and Aaron may need to exit stage left. they can lurk in the shadows, but it's all becoming a bit samey, and maybe she should do a rock album. I am, though, looking forward to seeing which ones from this album she adds to the Eras tour when she lands in Europe and the UK. Anyway, that's my little 10 pence worth. Let's get back to this week's releases.
On the street, I'm a king-size killer. I can make your kingdom come. On my feet, I'm an earthquake shaking. So open up my little one. Hey, what are you looking at? Who the hell do you think I am? And what are you looking at? Like you never seen a broken man.
All Born Screaming is the seventh studio album from American musician, Saint Vincent, describing this one as post-plague pop and guaranteed to have her signature distorted guitars. What the hell is not to love about this one? The two or three releases so far are quite exceptional, and I'm not going to lie, I'm ready. I'm ready to hear the complete album right now. So that is Saint Vincent with All Born Screaming, which is now available. And finally in music this week, we have the Pet Shop Boys. They released their 15th studio album nonetheless. They've promised an orchestra on board for every track. Oh, fancy. And this one is produced by James Ford, who has worked with Depeche Mode and Blur. So yeah, there are some people who will be excited by this, and having seen them last year in concert, absolutely marvellous. So that's the Pet Shop Boys nonetheless, which is now available. And there you go, that's your music. Like, so much music out there this week to distract you. Should you wish to get away from all the streaming and cinematic carnage that's out there. So why not go for a bit of air, take a breather and listen to something chilled or moving or noisy. Moving on, it's time we have a quick look at three things we noticed in pop culture this week. First up, for any fans of Richard Osman's hugely entertaining and popular crime books, The Thursday Murder Club, he revealed this week that the movie is finally getting into gear and set to start filming very soon. The big reveal for cast members were Helen Mirren, Pierce Brosnan and Ben Kingsley have been set in the lead roles, with Chris Columbus set to direct and write the script. Steven Spielberg's production house Amblin Entertainment is making this one, and for those who know the books, Mirren will play Elizabeth, Kingsley will play Ibrahim, and Brosnan will play Ron. Joyce hasn't been chosen yet, but with the calibre of this cast, and with Joyce being such a key figure in the books, I'm sure they are going to aim high. Exciting stuff, cosy cinema, crime ventures ahoy, that's the Thursday Murder Club. Yes. In other exciting casting news, and not a week goes by in Three Things without me mentioning 28 years later. And this week, we're back, because the Hollywood trades are reporting that Jodie Comer, Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Ralph Fiennes have boarded the first picture in the new series, which, as we've mentioned maybe once or twice, is a sequel to the original 28 Days Later, and written by Alex Garland, and directed by Danny Boyle. So, yeah, just shoot it into every vein I have. I'm feckin' excited for this. For any Smashing Pumpkins heads out there, I know you're out there, their lead singer and absolute mad lunatic nutball, Billy Corgan, has announced a new unscripted reality series called Billy Corgan's Adventure in Carnyland. The series seemingly will pull back the curtain on his somewhat eccentric life, whether it's as the frontman of the Smashing Pumpkins or in his role as a wrestling promoter for his very own National Wrestling Alliance. Throw in two kids and an upcoming planned wedding to his longtime girlfriend. You know what? This could be a fun and quite insane watch. Released in the US by CW on May 14th. We're yet to find out where it'll be showing here, but as you all know, we'll find it. Oh yes, we will find it. That's your three things, but it's been a bit of a big week for breaking pop culture news, and hey, this is a bumper pod, so we're going to throw in two Brucey bonus bits, After the news last week that Margot Robbie and her production company are making a Monopoly movie, well, this week's board game of the week is Sony Pictures doing a deal with Hasbro for the film and TV rights for Clue. Or as most normal people call it, Cluedo. Some of us still remember the 1985 movie Clue, which starred Tim Curry, Christopher Lloyd and Madeleine Kahn. I thoroughly enjoyed that, thought it was very funny. And maybe if we thought of this as a comedy version of Knives Out, it could be a huge hit, and I'm fairly certain they will also be getting an amazing cast. And yes, it was definitely Colonel Mustard in the dining room with the candlestick. I don't know. Anyway, what else? Oh yes, finally this week, as we all knew, Quentin Tarantino was making his final movie called The Movie Critic, and that was it. He was walking away, but it's all gone a bit crazy because he's actually binned that movie now in favour of something completely different, explaining that he had grown excited by other ideas. Why is he stopping at 10 movies? Lord only knows. Maybe he's going to do a big budget streaming series or just sit in the cinema and watch old movies. Rumoured plot lines for The Movie Critic were that it was to be set in 1977 and Tarantino was going to use the project to say goodbye to his previous movies, which would have existed in this one in a meta way. What? Hence allowing him to bring back some of his iconic cast members from his previous movies as either themselves or their fictional characters. Now that I've said that out loud, I think I really want to see this movie, so damn it. But it's gone to scrap heap now, so sayonara. Let's see what he goes for. Maybe he wants to go back to that Star Trek movie he's always talked about. And there you go. Those are the many things we noticed in pop culture this week. Normally I would now depart into the ether and let you ponder your weekend's life choices. However, because as I said earlier, it's such a special occasion, I'm going to ask you to stick around for one more treat today. I was lucky enough to have a fab chat with children's author Justin Somper, where we discussed his best-selling Vampirates series, his new book, Pirate Academy, and also some pop culture bits thrown in there too. So when you're listening to the interview, there may be some glitches in the matrix. I had a bit of a mare with some of the audio, but I think I've kind of sorted it. Yeah, you can let me know. But enjoy that. It is a fascinating chat. Justin is a bit of a ledge. His books are great. And the only other thing I've left to say is this is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast. Wishing you all the best. And until next week, stay safe and binge happy. Back in what, feels kind of like the 60s now, but was actually the early noughties, I regularly dealt with our next guest, both on the publicity and marketing side of children's books and publishers, where he was involved. But more importantly, he was the author of the best-selling, super high-concept Vampirates books. Yes, in case you didn't hear me correctly, vampires and pirates. Holy crap. 6 books set in one sweet little insane high seas world that was published in 35 countries. Ah, good times, good times. And now with his new series just launched, Pirate Academy, welcome to Here and Back Again, live from Perth, Australia, Mr. Justin Somper. It's great to see you again.
Thank you very much. Lovely to see you too. Good day from Western Australia.
I'm going to try keep this interview in a straight line, but good luck with that, because it's probably end up going all over the gaff. However, let's jump straight in with the truly important question here. Pirates. Why pirates? What's going on here?
Total fluke. People think I'm a pirate obsessive, and maybe I am becoming that way. But originally, the way I had the idea for Vampirates, it was literally just me walking around Crouch End, the part of London I used to live in, and the word Vampirates just kind of falling, as if it was falling out of the sky into my head. One minute not there, the next minute, that word, Vampirates, and such a concrete kind of a word. And I immediately had tingles on the back of my neck, and I thought, okay, this is probably the big idea I've been waiting for, and I have to do something with this. And how lucky for me that this idea has dropped into my head and not one of the many other authors who live in Crouch End, including Anthony Horowitz. Lucky me. But problem, don't know very much about vampires and know almost nothing about pirates. I think probably my last experience with pirates was Peter Pan at the Panto when I was a kid. So that's how it began, and that's what brought me to the piratical world.
Love that. Absolutely fantastic. Okay, before we get into you describing the new book, Pirate Academy, I'm going to attempt, and attempt is probably the key word here, to read out some of the blurb on the back of the book in a movie trailer tone. It's the first time for me, so please bear with me.
The year is 2507. The oceans have risen. A new dawn of piracy has begun. Jacoby Blunt and Jasmine Peacock are students at the Elite Pirate Academy. This is no ordinary school.
Right, follow up that absolute nonsense with, just a little bit about what the book is.
The year is 2507. Yes. So it reads independently of vampires, but it is connected. So you can either connect or disconnect. It's set 5 years earlier. So it's set in the same world where, as you say, the oceans have risen. The oceans are governed by the Pirate Federation. And the Pirate Federation, in its wisdom, has set up 9 amazing schools around the world where legendary pirate captains are busily training up the next generation. And appropriately, because I'm currently based in Western Australia, the story takes place in Pirate Academy Coral Sea province, so 500 years into the future, somewhere on the Australian coast. And as you say, we meet Jacoby and Jasmine and the other students of Barracuda class, who are all 11 and 12 year olds at this point. They all come from famous and successful pirating families, so they have quite a lot to live up to. And this particular story begins on Captain's Evening at the Academy, which is their version of Parents' Evening. But it's a fairly disastrous Captain's Evening by any measure. Jacoby has a really bad report and is told that he might be about to be expelled. Jasmine's parents don't even turn up and they're declared missing at sea, which sparks a bit of a mystery. And then Jacoby's roommate, Wing Moon, is removed from the school by his 2 pirate captain mothers. And then under the cover of night, this mysterious new kid, Neo Splice, arrives to join Barracuda class. And Neo, not necessarily his real name, brings danger to the doors of the academy through his links with this terrifying new organization, the League of True Pirates, who are intent on challenging the Pirate Federation and taking control of the ocean.
Absolutely fantastic. I love that what you just described is probably the first chapter of the book, or even the first paragraph. It's there's so much happening. So much happening. You touched on it there. It's an amazing array of characters, and they're such a fun, multi-layered gang, and such a diverse group of adventurers. Where did you draw your inspirations for the various characters throughout the book? Because there are many, many characters.
I mean, it's quite a challenge. It was sort of a challenge in different ways. So I had Jacoby and Jasmine, who I'd already written about in Vampirates. So it was kind of reimagining them 5 years younger, but kind of getting to know them all over again. And obviously then Neo, this mysterious new kid who I wanted to be one of the big three, a phrase I've borrowed from This Is Us, but I find works quite well. But because I'd also specified in Vampirates that there were only 15 kids in each class at Pirate Academy, I kind of thought, I've got to challenge myself to introduce all 15 of the class. And I don't quite do it in book one, but by book two, I managed to do it. But you're right. You know, I wanted this to be a really diverse an inclusive bunch. I feel like I've always written diverse and inclusive characters. And I think because this is set in the future as well, that was just really important to me. And I want readers from all kinds of backgrounds to be able to see themselves in the story. So, for instance, we have Shay O'Shea, who is a non-binary character who is just brilliant at swordplay. And you might also have noticed Leif Larsson, who is the son of Captain Larsson, and he's had his leg bitten off by a shark beneath the knee. So he wears prosthetics. He wears a prosthetic blade and a more regular prosthetic. And I've had some brilliant help from charities like Limb Power in advising me how to depict that realistically so that it just sort of melds into the story. And I think he's becoming a really, really lovely character. I'm just starting on book 3 at the moment.
Yes, I feel there's a lot more to come from some of these characters, and whether good or bad, we'll see which side of the coin they come down on. Talking about yourself and your travels on the open seas and your adventures leaving Crouch End and North London and now in Perth, how has this been for you, and how has this helped you in your writing and, I suppose, inspirations again for ideas for the books?
It's been handy. It's been helpful. I mean, I've written books about ships and sailing for almost 20 years with very minimal knowledge. I remember my dad loved sailing. He had a couple of boats at points, but sadly he was slightly landlocked in Hertfordshire, so he didn't get out onto the boats very often. But he absolutely loved it, and he had this lifetime subscription to Yachting Monthly. So when I was writing the first Vampirates book, he would give me bits of advice for the sailing scenes, which was very handy. But I felt like by the time I came to Pirate Academy, and as you say, living here 30 minutes drive from the Indian Ocean and closer to the Swan River, which is this vast river where there are a lot of sailing clubs on it, I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to actually get to grips with sailing. So I signed up for some lessons at one of the yacht clubs here. And I think it's literally about a year ago, I did these lessons over the weekend. So it was kind of tipping from autumn towards winter. And it was quite an education for me. I'm not sure that I'm really a natural sailor. And we had, we had a variety of climatic conditions. So there would be one week where it was cancelled because there was no wind at all, so the boats just couldn't even move. And then a really terrifying week where we were just out in some gale, we got grounded, the boat was pitching around, absolutely soaked through. But of course, for a writer, this is brilliant. As long as you survive, you're like, okay, this is great. I can now draw on this for about 4 or 5 books, and I don't need to have another lesson.
And not only is there the danger of the high seas, but creepy crawlies and snakes and things that can kill you crawling around all over the gaff. No, I'm not having any of that. Get me away. I'm sure you drew some inspiration in there too.
So in book 2, the Barracudas leave the academy and they go on Ocean's Bound weekend, which is 48 hours of sailing for the first time without the teaching captains. And yeah, I mean, again, I definitely did draw on Australia because I was like, what would be the worst things for them to encounter? So I think I Googled something like the world's most dangerous islands, and I started sort of printing off snakes, spiders, sharks, and storms. And I had book 2 kind of wrote itself on that basis.
Rather you than me. Rather I'd be going around in a hazmat suit, wouldn't be leaving the house. Anyway, as regards the books, I don't know how many are in the series or how many you're planning, but how do you keep track of the worlds and the characters, and especially actually because of the connection with Vampirates, do you have like a murder wall and you've got all the different links, or how does that work for you?
Sure. So the initial contract was for 3 books. I'm just starting book three at the moment. Book two's going through a proofread. And I think it's pretty clear to me, and hopefully to the rest of the team, that there's more than three books in this idea. I think in many ways I'm just getting going. And I love that feeling when you're writing a series where you just feel the characters building and the world building. So I would love to do at least another three, but you know, we'll see how well they do. Yeah, it can be a bit challenging. I mean, with Vampirates, I knew from the outset that I had six to play with, which was quite helpful. And I had synopses for at least the first four Vampirates, but I found as I got going, the series became much bigger and more epic in my mind. So I started altering stuff. And then I was also in that lovely position of being able to respond to what readers were wondering about and asking. It was quite early on in social media, but there was enough of it that, you know, I picked up that readers were kind of interested to know about Connor and Grace's dad, and was he really dead, and what was the story with their mum. So, you know, by the time I came to book five, I had to do a lot of retrofitting. So I think with Pirate Academy, I've kind of come in having learned that lesson. What I seem to be really, really bad at as a writer is wrapping things up totally neatly at the end of a book. And I think this is probably because I was raised on TV shows like Dallas, and I'm just obsessed with cliffhangers. And I love having cliffhangers at the end of the books where, you know, there is some level of resolution, but there's question marks that are going to keep us going. So I've plotted book three to have a really, really good ending, I think, but with quite a strong level of cliffhanger in there. But obviously, I'm really, really hoping that I'll be writing book four before I know it.
Who doesn't love a cliffhanger? Absolutely rocking. Well, as long as nobody wakes up in 2024 and it was all a dream and they're just, you know, anyway. Am I right in thinking that next year is the 20th anniversary of Vampirates?
No, it will. It will. You're absolutely right. No, because, Demons of the Ocean first published 2005. I mean, that 20 years has gone quite quickly by all accounts. Something radical happened recently with Vampirates, because they were originally published by Simon & Schuster in the UK and Ireland, and then they were republished later. So in the middle of... in 2020 and 2021, the most perfect time to relaunch a book series, not just the years, but March 2020 and March 2021, both occasions when no bookshops or schools were actually open for business, my books were relaunched in these beautiful editions by UCLan Publishing, the rather wonderful small but mighty publisher based at the University of Lancashire in Preston. So the books have got this new life and these beautiful new covers. But yeah, now you're making me think I should do something exciting to mark 20 years of them.
Absolutely. I'll be expecting a full fleet of ships floating down the river sometime in the future. But anyway, that's just me. Yes, the new books look absolutely gorgeous. The new jackets, so exciting times. And COVID be gone, they deserve their moment in the sun.
I mean, I suppose, you know, as a children's author, part of your battle is constantly downplaying how long the books have been out there, because you want them to be super fresh and, you know, you want them to keep appealing to the next generation. I think, you know, one of the reasons why I moved publishers was that the old editions were looking a bit tired. And I think now they do look perfect for the next generation of readers. And to be honest, I mean, I've been lucky. I've gone into schools, I guess, for about 20 years now, and there's always been interest in the idea and in the story. So, you know, that's exciting to capture. But maybe I need to do some new writing in this vein.
Oh, yes, excellent. Bring on the crossovers, would I say. Bring on the crossover. Right, it is Here and Back Again. We are talking on the pod of the home of streaming and movies and music. So it would be absolutely rude for me not to inquire as to what has caught your eye and what is entertaining you currently. So shall we start with streaming?
Streaming, it would be Ripley in all of its black and white gorgeousness. And I think we're 2 episodes to go, which we'll probably finish tonight. Yeah. And I'm very happy with this. I mean, I'm a fan of the books. I love Patricia Highsmith, and I particularly like the Ripley books. I loved the Anthony Minghella movie, but I really, really think this is a great adaptation. I think, I mean, of course, with Andrew Scott, it would be hard to go wrong, really. But I think what I've captured, what he's captured, is something I really, really love about these books, which is the mess that Ripley makes all the time. I mean, there's this sort of high comedy element with the murders. He's so inept, and I think that's why you're rooting for him quite a lot of the time, despite the terrible things that he's doing. And I thought in this series, all of the business with the boat after the key murder, when he was in the water and the boat was just going berserk, it was so prolonged and so delicious. And then, you know, the later murder in the Rome apartment, where there's just blood everywhere, and I just kind of wanted to turn up on the scene with some Dettol and kitchen towel and help him out. So I think they've done that beautifully. Cinema-wise, I've been a bit lax recently, but actually we had a cinema night last night, and we saw Civil War, which dystopian movies are not really my go-to, or traditionally they haven't been. But I think, you know, we all change a bit. And I suppose post-pandemic, I think dystopian movies just don't feel that dystopian. They kind of feel quite current. And maybe I've toughened up. I thought this was really, really compelling from writer and director Alex Garland. You know, the fact that it's set in the future, but it doesn't feel like it's set very far in the future. And America's at war, but it's at war with itself, which feels totally possible. And I thought it did that really clever thing, the really smart thing to do when you're dealing with like a big panorama of a war, to just pick a handful of characters, put them in a van and have them drive from New York to Washington through all of these badlands where they're just dealing with absolute psycho characters, whether it's at the gas station or the Christmas farm. Yeah, really quite a great kind of road movie as well as a war movie.
And so beautifully shot, like it was amazing to look at. But Jesse Plemons, feck right off with your red glasses. And what kind of American are you? Oh, my Lord.
That was definitely the potential nightmare, wasn't it? I really thought I was going to have nightmares about that. I love the, I agree with you. I thought it was really beautifully shot and a lovely soundtrack as well. And the combination of the soundtrack and those scenes of helicopters, it just made me think of kind of those old school movies like Apocalypse Now, which of course are, you know, they're Vietnam movies. And it just pointed up for me how far we've come, not in a good way, that now the war is happening in America itself.
Yes, an absolutely amazing. Love that film. Love it so much. And music-wise?
So at the moment, for me, it's all about Beyoncé. I haven't quite moved on to Taylor yet. I'm still loving Cowboy Carter. And we have it on in the car as we're driving around rural Western Australia. It fits very, very well.
Fantastic. Super duper. Some absolute crackers there. Thank you for that. Sadly, my friend, we've come to the end. We've come to the end of our journey. We are done. It's the sea. The sea has drained. What are you talking about? Thanks so much. This has been simply awesome. Pirate Academy, I just want to say, now bear with me here. I think it's like Mad Max for middle graders. keep up, stay on board. Instead of gangs dressed in all sorts of weird attire driving across a future scorched earth, here we have a world where the water levels have risen exponentially and shipping lanes and pirate gangs are instead the battleground. But maybe I've just been out in the sun for too long. But what's mainly important is I had an absolute blast reading Pirate Academy, New Kid on the Deck, which is now in all bookstores. And I'm very excited for book two, which is Missing at Sea. Who is missing? God only knows. Which is set to ship out on the 4th of July.
Whoa! Independence Day. Love it.
Hoorah! And the word on the street is that you're possibly in the UK for that launch or for that tour.
The word on the street is correct.
If you happen to get across the Irish Sea, you're very welcome to the Stony of the Batter, and we will discuss all things pirates and pop culture. So, you know, hopefully we'll catch up with you then. But for now, it's been an absolute thrill. It's been such a fun chat, and we'll see you on the dark side. And love these books. Love the first one. Can't wait for the second one. People, go find Vampirates. Vampire Pirates. It's just in the name. So thank you very much, Mr. Justin Somper.
Thank you so much. Pleasure's all mine. And I will be liberally quoting Mad Max for middle graders. Thank you very much for that, Dave.
Yes, what day is it? How many hours have we been going? Yeah, we're still here. Well, hello there, post-credits traveler. Welcome yet again. Da-da-da-da-da. Folks, it's been a long pod. Beautiful and long. As if you need any more nonsense. Any more nonsense content from me. All I've got to say is, you know what? We started this journey on July 29th, 2022. Like, holy moly. Do you know what's weird? As I double checked that, it flashed back to me that was 3 weeks before Wacker left the building in a blaze of glory. Like, oh, mad Ted. Absolutely mad. Anyways, I just wanted to thank you for all your ears, especially you, the post-credit travellers, the hardcore crew who lurk in the silence awaiting one more nugget. Just one more nugget. I appreciate the listens, the feedback, and the fact that you are still part of whatever the hell this journey is. Being honest, 100 episodes, I never thought I'd make it this far, but alas, I seem to have found something I quite like doing. So, with that, onwards and upwards, and then maybe sideways, we go. Ciao, folks. Ciao.